Okay, we're starting here on the Mishnah on Chaf Amud Aleph. The Gemara is describing what happens in the Mikdash each day. B'chol yom, tormim et ha-mizbeach b'kriyat ha-gever. Every day, they used to be tormim et ha-mizbeach b'kriyat ha-gever. Kriyat ha-gever, we'll discuss in the Gemara what that is. We had that in the Gemara in Shkalim, and now the Gemara in Yoma is going to have that same discussion that we had in the Gemara in Shkalim. With regards to tormim et ha-mizbeach, Shumat HaDeshen is a mitzvah that is done every morning on the Mizbeach, which is that the Kohen will go up to the top of the Mizbeach, scoop out Deshen, which is ashes, take them down from the Mizbeach, and place them Eitzel HaMizbeach. That's what the Pasuk says, that you have to take them off the Mizbeach and place them Eitzel HaMizbeach. It's on the eastern side of the ramp. And there, it's one of the miracles of the Mikdash, which we're doing tomorrow's daf, is that it was Nivla Bimkomo. It was swallowed up in its place. That's called Shumat HaDeshen. There's a different halacha called Hotzat HaDeshen, which was that after a certain point where the ashes on the Mizbeach became too much, they used to remove that deshen to outside of the Mikdash, outside of Yerushalayim, to the Makom HaDeshen. That's called Hatzat HaDeshen. That's also a Machloket. As Rashi notes, the Hatzat HaDeshen is only done when necessary. It was not an obligatory mitzvah to be do every day. It was a mitzvah of necessity. So when there was a necessity, they removed or did the Hatzat HaDeshen. But Shumat HaDeshen was done every day. On the other hand, the Rambam seems to indicate that there was a need for Hatzat HaDeshen every day. There might have been a mitzvah to do Hatzat HaDeshen independent of Shumat HaDeshen. But Shumat HaDeshen is the first avod in the Mikdash each morning, which is taking a selection of the ashes and placing them on the side of the Mizbeach. So that's what it says here, B'chol yom tormim et ha-mizbeach b'kriyat ha-gever, o b'samuch lo. Near the time of Kriyat HaGever, ben lefanav, ben l'acharav. A little before, a little afterwards, but generally in that time period. Over Yom HaKippurim. On Yom Kippur, it's Mechatzot. From midnight, they started that. Over Regalim. On the Regalim, they already started Me'ashmoret HaRishonah. From the first watch, which is, if you remember from the Gemara in Brachot, the night is divided up into three watches. So the first watch would be a third of the way through the night. La'ita Kriyat HaGever Megat, Ajayta Azaram Le'a Yisrael. The Kriyat HaGever would not come before the place was full already of people. Again, a lot of these Mishnayot, they have dangling modifiers, you don't know what it's referring to, but the Gemara is going to tell us it refers to the Regel. On the Regel, by the time Kriyat HaGever came around, the place was packed already because there were so many people up in Yerushalayim, so many people that wanted to bring Korbanot, that by the time Kriyat HaGever came, the place was packed. So now, our Gemara begins Tanan Hatom. There's a Mishnah over there. Rashi eliminated a piece of the Girsa. If you can look in Rashi, it says, Ahechekaimu. What is this referencing? What is the background to this Mishnah? And Rashi says, Eni Odei Alefarsha. Says, I don't know how to explain it. And this is what I think the Girsa is. And he brings the Mishnah from Zevachim. And that's the Girsa that we have generally in our Gemaras. If Rashi said, this is the Girsa, or he took something out of the Girsa, that's what we have in our Gemaras. The Gemaras were conformed generally to Rashi's Girsa. Over here, Tosafot says that he should leave it in. Ahechi kaminan. He says, why don't we leave this in? Because it's really not clear what's going on over here. Rashi takes it out, because he says, what's the point of Ahechi kaminan? What do you mean Ahechi kaminan? We're dealing with Shumat HaDeshen. We know what we're speaking about over here. Whereas Tosafot says over here that that can't be the case, that we're speaking about the Shumat HaDeshen, because Shumat HaDeshen is very straightforward. Once you have Deshen, once you have ashes, you take them off the Mizbeach. It must be that we're talking about a different type of harama, a different type of issue, which the Gemara is going to explain in a second. So Tosafot wants to leave it in, based on the way he's going to explain the Gemara further on. Rashi eliminates it because he says it doesn't really have any bearing. It doesn't seem to have any reference. So Tanan Hatam, we have a Mishnah over there in Zevachim, which says, Evarim shepakumi al gabei ha-mizbeach. You have limbs of the korbanot that were on the mizbeach that popped off, jumped off the mizbeach. Kodem chatzot, if it's prior to chatzot, yachzir. Then you put it back onto the mizbeach. Umo'alim behen. And there's still mi'ilah associated with them, because the principle of mi'ilah is, anything where it's nigmar mitzvato, the compliant mitzvah is done, ain mi'ilah bo. There's no more mi'ilah. Over here, if there's still something to do with this item, there's still a mitzvah to complete with the item, then there is mi'ilah. Lachar chatzot, after chatzot, lo yachzir. You don't put them back on, ve'in ma'alim behem, and there's no mi'ilah. Implying that chatzot, for some reason, is a cutoff with regards to these evarim. Prior to chatzot, there's still a mitzvah to put them back on the pyre. Plus, there is still mi'ilah, that the mitzvah is not done. After chatzot, the items are considered to be mitzvotan, is completed. That's why there's no mi'ilah, and there's no requirement to replace them on the pyre. The Gemara in Zevachim asks straight away, wait a minute. Im nitakel, if they were consumed, and they're already made into ashes, then why does it matter prior to Chatzot that they popped off? They're done. They're charred, they're done. If they are still whole, they still need to be burnt on the pyre, then even if they pop off after Chatzot, then why wouldn't you put them back on? If they still require burning, they still require to be made into ashes. The Gemara answers over there that it has to do with Shrirei. It has to do with certain of the muscles, certain of the items. They don't burn, they don't turn into ashes, so then when are they Nitakel? So that is what the Mishnah is discussing. It says that Chatzot is the cutoff. They spend until Chatzot on the fire, they're considered to be done. Even though they'll never become charcoal, they'll never turn into ashes. Nevertheless, Chatzot is the cutoff. That's what the Mishnah is speaking about. Mara wants to know, Menahane Mile. Where do we know this from? So Amarav, Rav says, we have a stir on the psukim. Katuv echad omer kol alayla v'iktir. All night, hiktir means that you'll place them on the Mizbech. That means that the Mizbech is ra'oi v'aktara all night. V'katuv echad omer kol alayla v'heirim. All night, v'heirim means that you remove. Heirim et ha'deshin. Ha'ketzad. How does that work? How does it work that you're being makriv all night, and then you're being meirim et ha'deshin all night? They seem to be mutually exclusive, which is, haktara is putting on items that need to be burnt. Harama is taking off items that are already complete. So how could you have it that the whole night you're being maktir, and the whole night you are being meirim? So what's the answer? Ketzad, haketzad, how do we resolve or reconcile between the psukim? Chelkeyu chetziol haktara v'chetziol harama. No problem. Half the night will be for haktara, and half the night will be for harama. So that is the cutoff of chatzot. Until chatzot, you have to put the items back on, because that's the zman haktara. And then, the zman harama is from chatzot and onward, because they are already consumed. Ameti, Rav Kahana, asks, wait a minute. B'chol yom tomim et ha-mizbeach b'kriyat ha-gever, o samuch lo, our Mishnah. That's why this is brought over here. Question from our Mishnah. If you, every day, take the Truma Tadeshin, around Kriyat HaGever, before or after, ubeyom ha-kippurim mi-chatzot, uberegalim mi-ashmoret ha-rishona. And on the regalim, you did it already from a third of the way through the night. Now the Gemara asks, v'isach adatcho mi-chatzot do, right? According to you, Rav, the cutoff of chatzot is a Torah law. That until chatzot, you're maktir, from chatzot onwards, you do haramat hadeshin, according to Rashi, or Harama in general, according to Tosafot. So if that's the case, Yisach Adatim Chazot Doraitahi, Heicha Deminon. How do you go earlier? Now Rashi again erased the Girsa here of Heicha Me'achrinon. How do we delay it? Tosafot upholds that Girsa as well. As far as Heicha K'mach Deminon, it's very simple. If Haktara goes until Chatzot, Harama begins after Chatzot, how can you be on the Regalim? You're starting at a third of the way through the night. That's prior to Chatzot. The Torah says Chatzot is the beginning of Harama, the end of Haktara. How do you move it in front of that? Now, Tosafot says that you can even leave in the Girsa of Heicha Me'achrinon, because in general, whenever we have a mitzvah d'oraita, and we have a span of time over which you can accomplish the mitzvah d'oraita, what's the rule? Zrizim makdimin the mitzvot. You do it as fast as possible. The Korban Tamid can be brought until the fourth hour of the day, yet they start working on it right at Kiryat HaGever. They don't wait. They have it by Brit Milah. Zrizim makdimin the mitzvot. You try to do the Brit Milah as early as possible in the morning. Mitzvah's all day, but you do it in the morning. So it says the same thing over here. If it was really a mitzvah d'oraita to do it from Chatzot, why were they waiting until Kriyat HaGever to do it? Yeah, it's kosher, but Zrizim Makdim the mitzvah, you would have done it from Chatzot. So that's what the Gemara says. Rav's answer is difficult, because Rav's answer sets up a d'oraita split at midnight, and if that's the case, why aren't we doing it at midnight all the time? Ela Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan offers an alternative explanation over here. Rashi, in other places, has the Girsa of Amar Rabbi Yochanan, which would imply that Rabbi Yochanan was building on Rav Shita. Tosafot rejects that, and Rashi over here does not explain it that way. Rashi over here also has the word Ella in. Ella would mean that Rabbi Yochanan's shot's coming to displace Rav. And this is a totally different view. Because it says all night, I wouldn't know that it's still the morning. If it's all night, then of course it's still the morning. Give another morning to the morning of night. So what does that mean? Rashi says, what's the standard boker? The standard boker is alot ha-shachar. If you're talking about nighttime, when does the boker of nighttime come? That comes at alot ha-shachar. Now if I say 10 boker the bokro, 10 an earlier cutoff time, an earlier morning to the night, Rashi says, well, the next stop, if you move backwards, would be midnight. And so that's what it means, tein boker the bokro. There's another threshold during the night by which it's cut off. As Rashi says over here, we came in, shenon natan zman bo to boker, kochachu chatzot alayla, hilkach. The whole night is kosher for harama. Harama tadeshin now is kol alayla. Kavucha chamim zmana are called nefisha ah b'chol yom, delo nefisha karbonot. So since it's flexible now, since harama tadeshin can be done all night, because that's what the pasuk says, kol halayla, then I could choose. The chachamim was given in the hands of the chachamim to decide when is the best time to pick, given the circumstances, given the number of karbonot. When would we do the harama tadeshin? That's what they set up in our Mishnah. Now the chatzot, what does that mean over here? So what Rashi does, or the way he explains Rabbi Yochanan, is that there are two dinim now. There's a din of Aramat Adeshin, which is kosher all night long. There's a second din, which is Haktara. Haktara is until midnight, because you have another boker that you added on here. And therefore Haktara is until the midnight cutoff. And once you have the midnight cutoff, there's no more Haktara, like the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says, if it falls off before chatzot, you put it back on. Falls off after chatzot, then you don't put it back on. So he basically divides the halacha. As opposed to Rav, who says, half the night belongs to harama, half the night belongs to haktara, Rabbi Yochanan says, no, harama belongs to the whole night. Haktara, you're right, we cut it off halfway, but he learns it out slightly differently from the psukim. So there are two different paths that are running. You have the path of harama that runs all night, and the path of haktara, which is cut off by chatzot. But they're not necessarily mutually exclusive the way that Rav has them. Rav has them, it's either haktara or harama. Can't have both at the same time, therefore he cuts it off at chatzot. Rabbi Yochanan's answer solves our problem of terms of how come the chachamim were deciding when to do harama, because harama is kosher kol alayla. So it was given to the hands of the chachamim to decide what is the best time to do harama through the night. And that would depend on, this is what you were asking, Ira, what does that depend on? Depends on the load of the night. Now, Tosafot brings alternative shot here in terms of what Rabbi Yochanan was saying, because the only thing that's difficult with Rashi is that Rashi is saying that the cutoff of chatzot refers to the haktara, when the pasuk that they bring, or the pasuk that Rabbi Yochanan's quoting, is talking about haramat adeshin. So why would you think that that's the cutoff for haktara when we're talking about haramat adeshin? So Tosafot over here discusses what the possibility or the possible answers are, is that what we're talking about here in the Ramat Deshin is when does something become Deshin? When does it become ashes? Well, that's what Rabbi Yochanan is darshaning from the Pasuk, is when does something actually become ash? And he brings from Aria Bachur that Katsiola Ramat Dekamar Afil Bishri Le'inyan Zesh Ramat Deshin Matiratan Lo'osfan Le'tapuach. That's when can you move something from being on the outskirts of the Mizbeach to the center of the Mizbeach? That's when it's already had its mitzvah be complete. So when does something qualify as Deshin? It's not the qualification what makes it into Trumata Deshin. Trumata Deshin, we know what it means. It says Deshin. You can only take it from the ashes. So that's not the definition here. What's going on here, what they're discussing here, is when can you move it from the sides into the pile in the middle? And so that's what this cutoff, the midnight cutoff is. According to Tosafot, the midnight cutoff is when do certain items automatically become ra'ui to move them to the middle. Coals, things that are already coals, you can move them to the middle. Things like shrirei, which don't burn up and don't ever turn into ashes, at midnight, you can move them into the tapuach in the middle. Not that you can do trumat deshin from them, because they're not deshin, they're not ashes. But they already qualify at the midnight cutoff to be put into the tapuach in the middle. And that's the way Tosafot explains this midnight cutoff. Not that haktara ends at that point in time, but rather what Rashi means is, that's the point in time where you can center, you can move them into the middle, they no longer have any mitzvah burning them anymore. So that's what the cutoff of chatzot is. Not the time period where you can do the trumat deshin, or it's already deshin for the trumah, but rather the cutoff point where you can move in and slide it into the tapuach in the middle. So he does that within Rashi to support Rashi's pshat and understand it better. He says that we're not really talking about the trumat deshin, but rather making something qualified to be in the deshin in the middle. And that's how he explains this position of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, the Gemara says, Hilkach. Because of what Rabbi Yochanan tashins, b'chol yom tamim et ha-mizbeach b'kriyat ha-gever o-samuch lo ben milafanav ben miachorav sagyo. That's sufficient on a regular day. You can take care of everything early in the morning. B'yom ha-kippurim de'iko de'chusha de'kohen gadol. On Yom Kippur, where you have the weakness of the Kohen Gadol, avdinan mi-chatzot. We start earlier at chatzot in order to give the Kohen Gadol the ability to rest in between doing the Trumat Tadeshin and the start of the avodah of the day. Tosafot takes up the issue over here whether the Kohen Gadol really had to do the Trumat Deshin. We know that all the avodah of Yom HaKippurim, of the day of Yom Kippur, had to be done by the Kohen Gadol. The Trumat Deshin is a safek because it's not done during the day. So the question is, does the Kohen Gadol have to do the Trumat Deshin? So here, Tosafot says, mashma from our Gemara, that yes, the Kohen Gadol had to do the Trumat Deshin, otherwise why would you make him do it? Have someone else do it if you're worried about Chusha the Kohen Gadol. That's what Tosafot says. On the other hand, the Riva says, you have the wrong Girsa in the Gemara. The Gemara would say here, the Ika Chosha the Kohen, that you should just read a regular Kohen and not a Kohen Gadol. That's why we do it. We're worried about the Kohanim that are going to get weaker during the day when they're fasting and so on and so forth. So we have them do the Tumat Hadeshen earlier. So the Rivah believes that it was not necessary to have the Kohen Gadol do it. Only a regular Kohen could do it. Just they moved it back to avoid any problems of Chosha. In the end, the Ri defends that you should have the Girsa of Kohen Gadol, and that a regular Kohen could do it, just they moved it back to avoid any problems of Chusha. They wanted to give the Kohen Gadol time to get ready, and that way when Miyad She'ale Amud HaShachar, he would get going and he wouldn't be weak to do the Avodah during the day. So Tosafot brings both sides of this, as to whether the Tumat Hadeshen is really classified as an Avodah or not, really revolves around this issue of the necessity to all the avodah on Yom HaKippurim to be done solely by the Kohen Gadol. And is this considered to be avodah to Yom HaKippurim? Is this considered to be an avodah of the day or the avodah of the night? Then we move on to the regalim, the Nefisha Yisrael, the tons of Yisrael coming, Unefisha Korbanot, therefore they're in their tons of Korbanot, therefore Avdina Miyashmot Arishona. Therefore we start already from the Yashmot Rishona, Kediktani Taimo. So Gemara explains us the reason, Laitak Kriyata Gever Magat, that last line in the Mishnah, and that's what I said before. The Gemara tells you what it's referencing over here, which is, when was the Zerah Mleah Yisrael? That was on the Regalim. By the time the Kriyat HaGever came, they were already ready to bring their korbanot already. Things were already rolling in the Mikdash because there were so many people, so many korbanot, they had to get everything done much earlier. They started the whole process much earlier. Plus, they were dealing with much larger volumes of ashes that they had to pile towards the middle, get into the tabuach to enable the ability to do Trumat HaDeshen. They needed to start much earlier. Now the Gemara says, my Kriyat HaGever. What is this Kriyat HaGever? This is a Gemara that was parallel in Shkalim. We had the exact same machloket here between Rav and Rav Shila. Rav Amar Kro Gavro. Kriyat HaGever means that it was the clapper, the person who did the wake-up call in the Mikdash. Bishila Amar Kro Tarnagola. It's referring to the rooster's call in the morning. Rav Iklalatri, the Rabbi Shila. Rav went to the city of Rabbi Shila. Rabbi Shila is one of those individuals that sits on the borderline between the Amoraim and the Tanaim. Lo hava Amora lemekim alei. They didn't have anybody who could be his Amora. Again, an Amora had two functions. One function of the Amora was to be a loudspeaker, was the equivalent of an amplifier system. The Rav would whisper him the drasha, and then he would amplify it. He would say it very loud to the Am. The second was translation. If the person who was giving the shir was speaking in Hebrew, then the language of the street was Aramaic. So he would say it over in Hebrew, and then the miturgaman, or here the Amora, would translate it into Aramaic for the people of the street. So he had two functions, translation plus being amplified. So those were the two things that he did. They had nobody available to be the Amora to put before Rabbi Shila so he could darshan. Kam Rav alei. So Rav got up to be the Amora. Now Rav was not recognized here. They did not know him in the city. And therefore, he just got up there and he did it. He was capable and he took over the position. So Rabbi Shila whispers into his ear, whatever he was speaking about, he says, Kriyat HaGever. And then, Karagavra. Rav translated that when he was speaking to the Am, he translated it as Karagavra, the way that he would have translated it, which is, what's Kriyat HaGever? That's the call of the individual who wakes people up in the morning. Amrele Rabbi Shila, Avalei Mamar Krat Tarnagola. He says to him, why are you translating it as Karagavra? Why don't you translate it as Kara Tarnagola, like Rabbi Shila would have done? Samale Abuv the Chare Zemer, the Gerdai Lo Mikablu Amine. He says, the flute is a good song for the freemen. The gardai, for the weavers, or for those on the lower part of the totem pole, lo mikablu amine, they won't accept it from me. So this is a mashal. People of great stature, the freemen, people of great stature accepted my translation. And all of a sudden now, the lower classes, meaning he's referring to Rabbi Shila now, you're unwilling to accept my translation? And now he explains it. Ki ava kamina alei de Rabbi Chia. When I used to be before Rabbi Chia, umafrishna my Kriyat HaGever, and when I translated for him, what is Kriyat HaGever? Kara Gavra, v'lo amar li v'lo mide. He didn't say anything back to me. V'at amar li ima kra tarnagola. And now you're criticizing me and say, kra tarnagola. Rabbi Chia, who is the tail end of the Tanaim, he's also the uncle of Rav, he's also Rav's Rebbe. So all of those things. And when I was learning before Rabbi Chia, I translated Kriyat HaGever as Kara Gavra, and he didn't give me any feedback. He said it was, as he was implying by his silence, that he acquiesced to my translation. All of a sudden I come here to you, Rabbi Shiva. You're not as great as Rabbi Chiya. Now you want to question my translation? Samalei, Marnihu Rav. Goes, oh my gosh, you're Rav. All of a sudden Rabbi Shiva wakes up and realizes the person who is his Amora is Rav. Again, they didn't recognize him. They didn't know him. They had heard of him, but they didn't know him. And so now Rabbi Shiva is like, oh no, this is Rav here, because he's quoting Rabbi Chiya. And so he figures out that this must be Rav, because he's quoting Rabbi Chiya as his Rebbe, and Rav was a Talmud of Rabbi Chiya, and he was Rabbi Chiya's nephew. Neinechmar, you should sit down. I don't want you to be my Amora. It's not Ra'ui for you to be the Amora. Amalei, Amrei Inche, Itagratle, Putz Amrei. So first of all, he brings them a localism, Mashal Ha'am, which is that if you're hired by somebody to be a day laborer, even if he makes you comb wool, which was a very lowly type of avoda work to be done, you do it. When you're hired to an individual a day, whatever he needs you to do, that's what you do. A day laborer's job is to do whatever they ask you to do. So do over here. I already was put up with the Amora. I gotta finish. I gotta finish out the day. I'm not gonna sit down now because I already started in the job. Others say that this is what he responded to him. Malim bikodesh velo moridim. It's minyana dioma. Malim bikodesh velo moridim. We only go up and not down. And since there's nobody else who's more qualified than me to be the Amora here, if I sit down now, you're gonna bring up someone who is less qualified to be the Amora in front of you. And that would be Moridim Bekodesh, and we don't do that. So I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to finish off the job for the day. So that's Malim Bekodesh L'Moridim. Of course, it's in Yana Dioma, because we paskin like Beit Hillel. That's why we only lit one candle last night, and we're going to light two candles tonight, because of Malim Bekodesh, the Ein Moridim. Tanya Kavote de Rav, Tanya Kavote de Rabbi Shila. We have a Braita that supports the position of Rav, and we have a Braita that supports the position of Rabbi Shila. Tanya Kavote de Rav. The bright that supports Rav is Gvine Cruz. Mahu. What is the call of Gvine? So Gvine Cruz was the wake-up caller in the Mikdash. He was, quote-unquote, the Kriyat HaGever. So what did he say? Imdu Kohanim Lavodatchem. Kohanim, get up to do your Avodah. Uluvim Leduchanchem. And the Vim to come to be on the Duchan where they used to sing, where they used to provide the musical accompaniment. Yisrael Lamamadeichem. And Yisrael to be in the Mamad, those were the Jews, the representatives of Klai Yisrael that came to be there with the Korbanot Tzibur to represent all of Klai Yisrael, because you need the Balim to be there when the Korban is brought. And Bnei Yisrael were divided up into Mamadot, in which representatives of those Mamadot used to come up to Yerushalayim to represent all of Klai Yisrael. Vayakolo nishma b'shlosh parsaot. He was so loud that his voice could be heard three parsaot away. Masa b'agripas amelech. It's an incident with Agrippa Samelech. Again, he's towards the tail end of Bayit Sheni, post-Herod. Shaya Bab Derech. He was on his way home. V'shema kolo b'gimel parsaot. And he heard this guy, Gvine Cruz, from three parsaot away. V'shiba l'beito shigalo matanot. When he got home, he sent him presents because he was so impressed by how loud he was in terms of waking up the people. V'afa pikein, Kohen Gadol mishubach mimenu. Even so, the Kohen Gadol has even better, makes more noise than him. Damar Mar, Far Mar Ana Hashem, when the Kohen Gadol does the vidui on his par, says Ana Hashem, that's how it begins. V'nishma kolo b'richo. And his voice was heard in Yericho. And we know that Yericho is about 10 parsaot away from Yerushalayim. V'amar Rav Chanan Rav Yochanan Mishalayim the Yericho Yud Parse. The distance between Yerushalayim and Yericho is 10 parsaot. V'af agav d'hocha kachusha, d'hocha lekachusha. And it's more impressive for more reasons, which is number one, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is fasting. He's weak, and yet his voice still reached Yericho. V'ha leka chusha, and in the morning, the general morning, then there is no chusha, there's no weakness. V'ha yom mahu, the Kohen Gadol is during the vidui during the day. V'ha tam melia, and over there was at night. The voice carries at night much further than it does during the day. So it's so impressive that the Kohen Gadol's voice reached Yericho, because number one, it was during the daytime when there is ambient noise. Number two is it's on Yom Kippur when he's weak. And yet he was still able to get his voice to be reached until Yericho, which was 10 parsaot away. And Gvini Cruz only got his voice to reach 3 parsaot. Although, it's true, as Tosafot points out, that in Tamid, when we learn Tamid, it says there that Miricho Ayushomim called Gvini Cruz. The Mishnah in Tamid says that they used to hear Gvini Cruz all the way in Yericho, which would indicate that he had just as far as the Kohen Gadol. So Tosafot wants to distinguish and say, by the Kohen Gadol, when they heard him in Yericho, they heard what he said. Ana Hashem, they knew exactly what he said. Yvini Cruz, he says, Kol Havara, the echo reached Yericho, or they knew that it was his voice, they heard his voice in Yericho, but they couldn't discern the words. So it was still greater what the Kohen Gadol did than Yvini Cruz. Point being that their voices were heard over a long distance, Exactly what the distance is, I don't think it's so important because these seem to be large numbers, exaggerations. But what is significant about Yericho, Yericho is many times mentioned in the context of the Beit HaMikdash. And that is because, first of all, Yericho, according to Yoshua, is put into Chayrim, is not allowed to be rebuilt. And what's interesting that the Gemara says that the way it was set up was from whoever's Chelek, they took out the Beit HaMikdash, they would replace that with Yericho. And Yericho would become the replacement for the Makom HaMikdash. So if they went and they made it into the equivalent of a Washington DC, a national city, but they had to take the land from someone. Meaning that even if you make it to a national city, you still have to carve it out with someone's chelek. So whoever's chelek it was carved out would be granted Yericho as the replacement land for where it got carved out of. So there you see in the Midrashim this connection between Yericho and Yerushalayim. It's very interesting because we see it here in the Gemara, we see it by Gvinei Cruz, we see it by the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippurim, we see it in that Midrash that there's a heavy correlation between Yericho and the Beit HaMikdash. I just suggest that maybe the connection has to do with Yericho being the first battle that Bnei Israel fight when they come into Eretz Israel, and they fight it under Hashem's providence. It's done with the Aron walking around the city, blowing the shofar, and represents Hashem's battling on behalf of Bnei Yisrael to come into Eretz Yisrael. The purpose of entering into Eretz Yisrael is to set up a nation, to set up the holy nation in the holy land, and then to have a Mikdash, to have a central place where they worship Hashem. And so the Mikdash is really the end goal of what was the beginning, Yericho. So Yericho represents the beginning of Bnei Yisrael's entrance into Eretz Yisrael in their purpose of what they're going to do. And the Mikdash is the completion, is the culmination of that. So Yericho and the Beit HaMikdash are mentioned always in context together because of that, the beginning and the end of what Bnei Israel were trying to do, set up a holy nation in the Holy Land with Hashem's presence amongst them. So that is the beginning and the culmination of that process. All right, now the Gemara says, "Damar Reb Levi, mipnai ein kolo shel adam nishma b'yom." Why does a person's voice not carry during the day? "Kederach shenishma b'layla," the way it carries at night, "mipnai galgal chama." It's to do with the galgal of the chama, the movement of the sun in the rakia, where it's minaser. Minaser means to saw through the rakia, or to create sawdust. Kecharash haminaser barazim, like a carpenter that is sawing wood, sawing cedar wood. So that's the same way. The sun does that, it causes noise. So their idea being that the galgal, remember this has to do with their view of how things worked. The galgal is the circle or globular fixture upon which the constellations were. They were the stars were affixed to a galgal. The sun was affixed to a galgal. That fixture moved, and that's how the sun moved, and that's how the stars moved. The rakia was the firmament by which the sun was in front of it or behind it. So that movement along their galgal as it rubbed against the rakia, is what it sounds like over here, caused some sort of noise or friction. And that's what they're discussing over here. And then it also, when it penetrates through the rakia and comes back through the rakia, it also has some effect. As Rashi explains over here, what's that sawdust behind that is that what you see by the sun. When you look at the sun, you see some white, or you see some light, the rays that come behind it. That's that sawdust from the friction of the galgal against the rakia. Vai chirga diyoma la shemei. This dust that is created during the day, la shemei, its name is la, meaning lo. Which is Vainu de Kamar Nukadetzar, that is what Nebuchadnezzar says, Behold Daire Ara Kalach Hashivin, that all the inhabitants of the world are Kilach Hashivin, are like nothing. But as if they're nothing, as if they're totally gone, wiped out. And that's here the Gemara correlates between that, meaning what means they're like nothing, they're like the sawdust of the sun that is running through the Rakia. Tan Rabbanan, Ilmalei Galgal Chama Nishma Kol Hamona Shel Romi. If it wasn't for the sun, the movement of the sun, the noise created by the movement of the sun, then you would hear all the noise of Rome. Ilmalei Kol Hamona Shel Romi, and if it was not for the noise of Rome, Nishma Kol Galgal Chama, then you would hear the noise of the sun's movement, meaning that they each cancel each other out. Here again, we're talking about things of significance. That's the Bria of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the sun and the noise of the sun. Versus Kol Hamona Shel Romi, which is the Roman Empire, the expansion of the Roman Empire and the way they're conducting themselves, which seem to be antithetical to Hashem. So that noise is offsetting the noise of the Bria of Hashem. So that which Hashem put into motion, in which Hashem is the creator of and the beauty of creation, that's being offset by the behavior of the Romans, of the Roman Empire and of the Romans themselves. And the two, therefore, are mutually exclusive. They are knocking each other, the sound of each is knocking each other out. Tanabanan, Shalosh, Kololot, Olchem Misof Olam Ad Sofo. There are three voices that are heard from one end of the world unto the other. Ve'eluhein, Kol Galgal Chama, Ve'kol Amonah Shalomi. Two of them we already mentioned, so that's mentioned over here. Ve'kol Nishama, Meshad Yoshua Min Aguf. And the sound of the Nishama as it leaves the goof. Ve'eshamim, Afleida. Some say so too at the time of birth. And I guess that's the Nishama going into the goof. Ve'eshamim, Afleida. Others say that's also Ridia, which is Minyana Dioma as well, which is, as Rashi says, Malach HaMumuneh Al Ashkod Taretz. It's the Malach who is appointed to control the rain, putting the water, watering the land. Imatar Shemaim, Imaal, Minatom Mitachat. From the rain from above, and from the waters from underneath. And he's called Ridya, because he's Dami the Egla. He looks like an eagle. Ridya, also the word that should be familiar to you, is rodeo. But Ridya is Shor HaChoresh, is a plowing shore. That's what Ridya means in the Gemara. And since he looks like an eagle, they call him a Ridya. That's his name. And his noise, or the voice of him working, goes from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. Here we're going to get this in the Gemara in Tanit, which is, these are things where it takes significant intervention to move or change these things. These are certain keys that are in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those that the Gemara in Tanit mentions is Tkiyat HaMeitim, Leida, and Matar. Those are the three things that are in Hashem's hand. So two of them are mentioned over here, which is Leida and Ridya and Matar, because these are really significant events. And we know that in Eretz Yisrael, where we're dependent on rain. Now we just started davening for rain because we haven't seen it yet. That Ridya, I mean, that idea that this takes all the kochot to bring the rain, that's what the meaning is over here. So again, with the Nishama that leaves the goof, and the Nishama entering the goof, that is something that is against the nature of the Nishama, to be compelled to be within a physical being and to be limited by a physical being. So that's why the noise is so great, both of the putting the Nishama into the goof as well as the Nishama being freed from the goof. These are tremendous events, significant events. And that's why we're talking about a kolo being Nishma, one end of the earth to the other. And the same thing has to do with rain. The watering of the land, the rain coming to Eretz Yisrael, which is a significant event. It's not something that we just take for granted. Therefore, it involves noise from reaching from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. Now that would go for the first two as well, which is called Galgal HaChama and Kol Amonah Shiromi. Those are again Hashem's creation, the Bria that goes on each day. And Kol Amonah Shiromi, which is basically those that are antithetical to Hashem. Those voices are heard one end of the earth to the other end of the earth. So now, Bo Rabbanan Rachmei and Nishama B'Shash Yotzam in a Guf. Chamim asked for Rachamim that when the Nishama leaves the Guf, that it shouldn't make such noise of Atlua, and it was eliminated. They didn't want it to be so traumatic. And the Shema leaves the goof, so they had that taken away. Tanya Kavotid Rabbi Shila, so that was the Braita that supports Rav, that the Kriyat the Gever here was Gever. We got sidetracked a little bit. But we saw that from the Braita, because we saw Vinay Cruz was calling out, and that's the person who was doing the wake-up call in the Mikdash. Now we have Tanya Kavotid Rabbi Shila, Yotzei L'Derech Kodum Kriyat the Gever. Someone who goes on his way before Kriyat the Gever, Damo Berosho, is taking his life into his own hands. In that he's responsible. If he gets killed, it's his own problem, because he did something that was wrong, that he left before Kriyat HaGever. Ushai Omer, Ad Shishneh, until he does it twice, Yishremim Ad Shishalesh, until it happens three times. Beza Tanagol Amro, what Tanagol are we talking about here? Tanagol Benoni. A mid-range, a mid-sized Tanagol. I don't know if it's about size, but maybe the guy who's not too early, the guy's not too late. But a rooster that calls in the middle of the morning section, that's the time where you can start going on your way. Prior to that time is nighttime. If you leave during that time, you're putting your life at risk if you're learning during the night. The time to start traveling is after Kriyat HaGever, once the Tarnagol is called. What Tarnagol we're talking about over here? We're talking about a Tarnagol Benoni. And again, with Yishamim, the first call, some say it's been the second call or even the third call. You have to wait for it until you know that it's time to leave, that day has really begun, and then you should leave. The Gemara is going to discuss this a little more extensively. It's from the Gemara in Bava Kamma as well, which is that a person should leave his house, be kitov. We learn it out from the upcoming Parshiot. We're going to learn it in this week's Parsha, which is that the brothers, when they leave, they only leave once daybreak happens. And so the Gemara tells us that the proper way to travel is only once there's daybreak. You shouldn't travel before daybreak because you're endangering yourself to leave before that point in time. What you see from this Braita is Kriyat HaGever that's mentioned here is clearly talking about Tarnagol, and that's the Braita that supports Rabbi Shila's position. Okay, we'll stop over here.